When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This week in Underdogs, we're feeling the madness. It's almost March, and we've got the teams to focus on to get ready for the tournament and a slew of upsets.
The cry goes up both far and near for Underdog.
Underdog.
Countdown going on right now. Morrow, up to Schultz. 5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes!
By George, the dream is alive.
Underdog.
And I guess there's only one thing left to do. Win the whole fucking thing.
It's the Underdogs back with you. Can you feel it, Peter?
I can.
You feel what's coming?
It's you know, unlike Damian Lillard, I am not leading a lonely life right now. I am surrounded by all my favorite emerging college basketball teams because I'm immersed in studying and watching and breathing. That's right. The bracket breakers, the long shots, the underdogs, the Cinderellas all coming your way. Courtesy of us, right?
That's right. And us being, I'm your host, Jordan Brenner. That is my co-host, Peter Keating. And Peter, let's dust off some calculators today. Listeners, let's gather around in a circle. We're not going to get too into the weeds, but we want to get a little smart with you today on a couple of subjects.
Jordan, is that your new haircut or a propeller turning on the top of your head?
Anyway, when Peter's done making ridiculous comments, we will get into two important things. One, some of you may be planning to draft fantasy baseball teams. Others, just getting into the lay of the land for baseball. So we've got some breakout guys, some undervalued guys who are worth watching for some reasons that might teach you a little bit more about the game. So even if you're not a big fantasy player, stay with us, listen, maybe you make a couple prop bets. There's lots of ways to apply this. But first, as you know, Peter and I have sort of made our mark back at ESPN with Giant Killers, The Athletic with Bracket Breakers. We project NCAA tournament upsets. We've got a model. It's called Slingshot. It has identified lots and lots of things that every March tell you who's going to pull up big upsets in the tournament. We are so psyched, less than 3 weeks from Selection Sunday. But we want to tell you right now that if you want upsets in your bracket, we've got a few teams you should be focusing on right now, as the regular season concludes, as conference tournaments get going, that you should want to see in the bracket. And Peter, let's start with a team we actually mentioned a couple months ago, but it's worth mentioning again, the Indiana State Sycamores.
Yes, sir. Are your lights still on? Because when they come in the room, they shoot out the lights. So,
Peter is so witty. That's right. You may have seen them. They have Robbie Avila and his goggles at 6'10", also known as College Jokic. He shoots 41% from three. He's putting up a 17-7-4 season. But it's not just Avila. They've got five guys who score in double figures. They all shoot threes. They're arguably the best shooting team in the country. They lead the nation in effective field goal percentage. They take half their shots from three and hit 38% of them. The only thing that keeps them from going from a good bracket breaker to a historically great one is that they don't force turnovers. They don't grab offensive rebounds, but still they're leading the Missouri Valley Conference by a game, but Drake is right there.
Yeah.
Joe Lunardi right now has them as an 11 seed as the automatic qualifier. They're 31st in the net rankings, only 1-3 in quad one games and 4-1 in quad two. So the thing is twofold. Peter, does this team have a shot at an at large if they don't win the conference tournament? And if not, should we all be flying to the conference tournament to root them on?
I would love to say they have a shot at an at-large because I think rewarding teams that do well right now under the system we have now, you can do great all season long, dominate your conference, listen to the platitudes about conference championships, college football and basketball season. Then your entire season can be spoiled on a Wednesday afternoon if you trip up in a conference tournament, right? I think rewarding a team like this is much better for the game and also creates better matchups, better 14 and 15 seeds instead of allowing just the conference champions who may not be the best team, or let alone the best killer and the best team in their conferences, into the tournament. I've ranted about this for years to absolutely no effect. Unfortunately, things seem to be moving in the opposite direction, Jordan. How many at-large teams are there going to be from any non-major conference? Now, yeah, the Mountain West, okay, might get 5 or 6 teams in, but the smaller conferences, I think maybe the Atlantic 10 will be lucky to get 2. I don't know if anyone else is going to get more than 1. So team like this is the classic example. Indiana State, classic example of a team that has to sustain this level of play through its conference tournament. It's a tricky thing. It's a tricky thing, too, to be dominant all season long against inferior opposition, still retaining the talents that is.
It's going to be really interesting to watch
as an underdog. Yeah,
it's going to be really interesting to watch their case if they don't win the. Hopefully it doesn't come to that. Hopefully they win the conference because we want to see them in. But they do have an at-large case to make over a lot of these, you know, mediocre big conference teams. But let's move on, Peter. I know there's a smaller conference team you want to talk about.
It's my favorite team in the whole country right now. Jordan, have you been following Samford?
Oh, I have.
It's crazy. First of all, Samford is coached by a guy named Bucky McMillan. He is not a backup infielder for the Milwaukee Braves. He's an actual coach who made his bones, not in predicting giant killers, but in winning high school championships in Alabama. This guy had no college track record. He just built great programs in Alabama. I think 7 state championships before he came to Samford. Now, this is an undersized but extraordinarily aggressive team. This team ranks 10th in the country in steal percentage. They also do things unlike Indiana State. All the other things you want to see a giant killer do. They hit the offensive boards. They're great at forcing turnovers.
And they shoot 40% and they shoot threes.
They shoot 40% from threes and take a lot of shots from three. They have a sense of humor about their emerging identity too. Like at the beginning of the season, they shot a comedy video of one of their shortest players facing off against a guy who was really tall because they were going to open the season against Purdue, and they had him going against Zach Edey for the first play of the season, which is great. The kind of thing you want to see.
They did lose that game by 53 points to Purdue.
They did get crushed in that game.
But as we talk about, if you're an underdog, if you're a giant killer, high risk, high reward strategy. Doesn't matter how much you lose by, you have to give yourself a chance to win.
If it's win or go home, who cares how much you go home by?
Now, what that game does kind of allude to is that they've played, other than that crushing loss and a 10-point loss to VCU, they've played no one. They've got a really, really weak schedule. So it's not like they're in the at-large conversation, but an auto bid in the same league, that gave us Furman last year, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
In fact, Furman was up 6 against Samford and couldn't get an inbound pass straightened out in the last 45 seconds of a game last week and lost to Samford. Samford has a long winning streak. Yeah, they're way ahead in the Southern Conference, which is kind of a conference of killers. The teams if you compare conferences, SoCon teams shoot a lot of threes and force a lot of turnovers. They always generate somebody fun in the big dance.
Right. All right, well, here's a team that's basically playing its way out of a bid, but if they could somehow...
I feel so bad for this team right now.
I know, because we love them because they're ridiculous. But Texas A&M, they've lost 4 straight games. They are in the toughest conference in the country in the SEC, but they're 15-12 now, 6-8. They're going to have to win out their last 4 regular season games and make some noise in the SEC tournament to have a shot at an at-large. Otherwise,
Jordan,
they got to...
The 4 losses have been bad too. They've been every which way. They had 3 tough grinding losses, and then they got blown out by Tennessee, right? I mean, just
but the reason why we love this Buzz Williams team is because they're the best offensive rebounding team in the country. They cannot shoot. Okay. They're 360th in the nation in 3-point shooting at 27%. They can't, they're 352nd in effective field goal percentage, but they get almost half their misses. They're offensive rebounding 42.4% of their missed shots. So it's hilarious to watch them play because they miss, they go get the ball. They miss again, they go get the ball. They miss again, they go get the ball. And we've seen teams like that. I think of the Minnesota team that beat UCLA, that upset UCLA a few years ago. Yeah. We've seen teams like that be really dangerous in March, but damn, they've really screwed things up lately.
Well, we don't just say A and B add up to C. We try to give people sketches of what teams play like through their statistical tracks, mm-hmm. right? So here's an easy one. Texas A&M misses all their shots, but grabs all their offensive rebounds. unfortunately for them, and it's been really painfully evident in these last four losses, they're not hitting second chance shots. They're not even hitting second chance shots at the rate, which is horrible, that they shoot for the season. Ordinarily, I'd say, well, over time, that'll even out. But they're running out of time. They have four games left. And it looks, you know, Joe Lunardi said about this team, they got five quad one wins, which should make them a lock. But then those five wins go away fast when they try to pass the eye test.
Well, speaking of running out of time, we're almost running out of time for this segment. So let's real quick hit on the most interesting conference race down the wire. And that's the Ivy League.
Who would have guessed, right?
The Ivy League is good, first of all. And you've got three teams that are 9-2 in conference play. Princeton is probably the best overall team of the bunch, if you look at metrics. Cornell, the best overall killer, which we'll talk about in a second. And Yale is also 9-2. They're just sitting there. But Ivy Madness, top four teams advanced to semifinals, is going to be super fun. We will be there at Levy and Jim, my old stomping grounds at Columbia. But Peter, real quick, make the case for Princeton. Obviously, we saw them make the Sweet 16 last year with two big upsets. Make the case for them following it up again this year.
Look, number one, they're a better team than they were last year. They just are. Like, they were 15 seed last year. They're a stronger team across many categories this year. Number two, they play slow. It's not quite the old Princeton offense, but they play slow. They take a lot of threes, and you can count on them to play smart. Also, look, I fell for Cornell last year because they were bombs away. Cornell's better than they were last year too, but Cornell's defense is very, how can we say, suspect.
Well, Cornell, first of all, is coached by former Princeton player and former teammate of Mitch Henderson, Brian Earle. What's cool about Cornell, they do all the things you want. They force turnovers. They shoot a lot of threes. They don't necessarily shoot them well all the time. They actually hit 62% of their twos, so they have the ability to go inside when they want to. And you got to love Chris Mannin, who is third in the nation in steal percentage at 5.8. So they actually, we have a secret sauce component of our, you know, when we look at giant killers or bracket breakers, and they have the best sauce of this group. Princeton's the best overall team, and anything to say about, look, Yale's hanging in there. They're 9-2. They don't profile metrically the same way that these two teams do.
Props to Yale. Yale used to be a tremendous offensive rebounding team, but James Jones, he can't recruit the very best players. What he has done is an excellent job of adapting his team to the players he can recruit, which means some years they make for good giant killers and some years they don't, but they're always excellent. It's sustained excellence. I mean, they're a good team. I think this race is going to come down to who has to face off in that semifinal. Like if there's a team that has to play one game to get that auto bid, it'd be a lot better off than the two that have to face off against each other.
Well, and Yale has the edge in these last three games because Princeton and Cornell have to play each other. So the loser of that game will almost certainly be the three. It's just a question of who potentially wins a tiebreaker to be the
two. It's not predictable because Cornell's already beaten by Princeton, I think, by 15 points. And by the way, what the hell's happened to Harvard? I just want to ask. I thought, you know, is it that Tommy Amaker didn't get the Duke job? I don't know. What's
going think on? It's they realized that you're one of their alums, and it's so depressing to everyone on the court that they're just not motivated to win anymore.
I showed up for basketball games when I was there.
And I'm sure that was a joy for everybody in the arena. All right. Well, on that note, let's take a brief break, and then we'll be back with some very fun, very cool, very smart baseball takes.
Underdog, underdog.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each four-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour four-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m., and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Underdog. Underdog.
Maybe you play fantasy baseball. Maybe you don't. Maybe you sit in a basement for a month like Peter planning for some league where you draft 147 players each on a team and, you know, think that that's a standard league. I don't know. But I find that looking for sleepers for fantasy baseball also might give you a little leg up on just thinking about the season in general and teams you might not expect.
Try to gussy this up. Fantasy baseball is its own reward. Yes, you'll find real life sleepers. When you fall in love with fantasy players who work out, that makes you a better fan of the game. And of
all
those
right. Well,
players.
Since you're Come such on. A great fan of the game, you've been crunching the numbers. Give me a couple of guys who are undervalued in drafts so far, maybe relative to what they should have done last year or other expectations. Hit us with it.
Jordan, maybe the guy whose trajectory is so pointing further upward than I think anybody's taking into account is Jordan Walker of the Cardinals. This guy was a monster hitter when they drafted him. He's only a year and a half removed from that. Look, I knew the Cardinals.
And let's just, his ADP, we'll give you the guy's ADP.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So his ADP is 123rd,
right?
At least according to Fantasy Pros. And he's going 30th
among outfielders.
Yeah.
And that's where he's going to play. When the Cardinals brought him up very early last season, gave him the third base job, he was terrible on defense. You could see it was affecting him. And the Cardinals, you could tell when they lost their organizational touch last year when they started blaming all their problems on their backup catcher. But another weird thing they did was to install Jordan Walker at third base at the age of 21 and then demote him after he cooled off after a hot start for a couple of weeks. That didn't make much sense. Anyway, they brought him back up and all he did was hit. And he hit at a very young age, and he has light tower power, and he's not going to have to worry that much about defense. And he's playing for a team with lower expectations than usual. I think it's all set up for him to do extraordinarily well, just based on just draw the line where you think he's going, Jordan.
Well, that's the question. If he's going 30th among outfielders in drafts, how much higher would you reach up to grab him? 20th?
Yeah, something like that.
All right.
I think he's all worth right. a starting
Look,
spot.
I always love betting on young players. You'd rather be a year too early than a year too late. Got one more big hitter for us before I give you my prime pitching bounce back guy.
All right, before I let me give you somebody who's going to seem obvious and he's being drafted high, but I think it's too low anyway.
Okay.
That is Pete Alonso of the Mets. Here's what's going to happen.
Let's give the ADP 24th overall.
24th overall fourth and fourth among first basemen. And I challenge you. I'll give you Freddie Freeman, but I challenge people. Who are three better fantasy first basemen than Pete Alonso? Matt Olson, who had his career last year with a home run total that was 15 higher than anything he hit before, and who's older than Alonso? I don't get that. Let me just say this, Jordan, before you go on about Bryce Harper.
I'm not going to go on about Bryce Harper. What I'm going to say is that I think the fear with Pete Alonso is that if you're in a standard league, his batting average kills you.
Well, here's the deal. I'm glad you brought that up. Because among everybody in baseball who qualified for the batting title last year, Pete Alonso had the lowest batting average on balls in play. That bounces around from year to year. Look, Francisco Lindor playing for the same team, so same management, same opponents, same lineup, right? His batting average on balls in play was in the 230s early last year. From June to July, it looked like a switch flipped. He had 300 BABIP for the rest of the year. His batting average on balls in play rebounded by the end of the season. Alonso's just didn't. Maybe because he was playing hurt, but there's no noticeable drop off in the strength of contact that he was making. He just happened to have a terrible year on balls that he put into play. He hit 210 on balls in play. Who does that and keeps a job? Doesn't affect his power. He's the most reliable power hitter in baseball, and his batting average is going to bounce back up. I wouldn't be surprised if he had a higher batting average than Matt Olson, who had a BABIP of 330 last year. That difference is primarily.
And look, Alonso did hit 271 2 years ago and 260 the year before. That won't kill you at all, especially in today's day and age.
Right.
Speaking of guys who were unlucky and are primed to bounce back, I present Mr. Dylan Cease. Now, I think he will desist in terms of poor performance.
He's stealing all my material.
Yes. Oh, please. My dad and I have been making this joke for years. Look, Dylan Cease had a 4.58 ERA last year. Looked like he sucked, right? Well, the underlying metrics suggest something different. His FIP was 3.72. If you don't know what FIP is, it's what fielding independent percentage right. is that the
just strikeouts, walks, and home runs allowed smushed into one number and scaled right. to look like ERA.
Correct. His ex-FIP was 4.08. He only had a 69% left on base rate. That means he allowed guys to score who are on base way more than the league average. By comparison, most pitchers of his ilk were around 75%. Blake Snell was 87%. That's why he won the fluky Cy Young Award. And Cease gave up, speaking of Babbitt, like you were talking about, hitters hit 330 against him on balls in play. That was the highest mark, again, among any of the top 30 pitchers in ex-FIP. His strikeout rate was as good as ever. He's 2 years removed from a 220 ERA season, yet he's still going 30th among starting pitchers in drafts. That's way too low, given both the bad luck that shouldn't be repeatable and his upside, which we saw the year before. You with me? Cease, 10 spots higher than that?
I'm absolutely with you. In 2022, Cease gave up barrels when you hit the hell out of the ball on 6.2%. of plate appearances against him. 2023, the number 6.2%. Nobody was hitting him any harder. He was having terrible luck and waving guys on base home. You know, yep. that just doesn't sustain.
All right.
He's the opening day starter. Did you see he's been named the opening day starter for the White Sox after a whole winter where people thought he was going to get traded?
Look, I think they're right to hold on to him unless they got an absolute haul. And by the way, he might've been one of the guys I'd be willing to give up an absolute haul on, but I digress. Peter, hit us with another buy low candidate.
All right, you know how you can tell when a team believes in a player? When he's a minor leaguer and they give him a major league contract. That means he's going to play. Playing time matters a lot to young people and to accumulating stats. I'm talking about, let me make sure I have these numbers right, 6'2", 211-pound second baseman of the future for the Detroit Tigers, Colt Keith. Look, this guy had 27 home runs, 60 walks, hit over 300 between AA and AAA last year. Might take him a little time to catch up. This is an outstanding draft pick for keeper leagues in particular because he's good. He just needs some time and some at-bats. They're letting him do the last phase of his minor league development as their starting second baseman, which is a cool strategy instead of obsessing over arbitration eligibility and service time, right? So this guy can hit. And below Mookie Betts and Ozzie Albies, this is a fairly thin position this year. So I love Colt Keith, second base eligible Detroit.
What's a reasonable set of statistical projections, I can't speak, for Keith this year? Because I don't think we should go too crazy. You know what, 20 home runs? You know, I saw in Fantasy Pros that the consensus projections were like 13 homers, 53 RBIs, a 256 average. What's realistic?
I think if he hits 270 with 17 home runs, that's realistic, and that puts you in the middle of the pack for second baseman. But the upside is enormous, and like I said, it's particularly attractive in keeper leagues.
Not only is the upside enormous, apparently the backside is enormous too.
that's a new stat for us to track.
Yeah. Wait. All right. Weighted weight. All right. So Colt Keith got it. Anybody else off the radar that you, again, that's really tracked your attention?
You know, if you're going to take a flyer on a relief pitcher who's not an ace but might be a step or two away from it, Matt Brash of the Mariners struck out 13.6 guys per nine innings last year. That's outstanding. Like, I think it's worth it to take guys like Johan Duran like a year early, especially, again, in a keeper league, but even just to build your ratios. Brash is somebody to watch. And unlike somebody like Kevin Ginkle, I mean, you know, I don't know if Matt Brash whips his hair around, but, he has better command than Ginkle, and he's not famous just because of small sample size performance. So I think that guy's a keeper.
It's tricky because, again, in your league, I think you've got all sorts of non-closers. If you're in a standard league where you, A, don't use holds and you still use saves, and B, where you really don't have enough teams, say more than 10 teams in a league, to necessitate having non-closers in your lineup, is a guy like Brash even worth drafting? Are you holding on to him?
I mean, a lot of that depends on you're willing to gamble that you get a good version of somebody like Aroldis Chapman this year instead of a 6 ERA and home runs flying out of the ballpark. You know, there's a couple of really, really elite closers who are worth getting in any league. The rest depends on your format. And the rest depends on your format.
The rest depends on your format.
Well, the rest depends on my backside. Yeah.
Yeah. You also said something that actually I found interesting yesterday, which was really rare when we talk. And
well, leap year's coming up, Jordan. I try to save him for once every 4 years.
That's right. So, you know, you were talking about guys who should have had more RBIs last year.
Yeah.
And
look,
how you can project that. So enlighten our audience a little
bit. Look, leaving aside real world value, okay, and just looking at what you can pile up in fantasy leagues and RBIs count, you want to find guys who have power, who are in good lineups, or at least can hit whether or not they're in good lineups, but who did really poorly with runners in scoring position or high leverage situations last year, because that stuff bounces around all over the place too. I mean, Jake Cronenworth in high leverage situations hit 128 last year. The year before that, he was at 375. So I just want to bring three numbers to your attention. Xander Bogaerts hit 191 with runners in scoring position last year. Byron Buxton, 141. Brent Rooker, 167. These are all guys who could hit 30 home runs if they were having the kind of year they had last year. In fact, this happened with Rooker. They'd hit 30 home runs and drive in about 62 runs, but they're all capable easily, just by their performance bouncing up to whatever they've done in the past, of driving in 15 or 20 more runs than they did last year and where their prices suggest they should be this year.
And real quick, that does not mean that these players are not clutch, right? This is noisy.
This is all noise.
Yeah.
This is all noise. What are we going to, are you going to say that Bogaerts, Machado, Tatis, and Cronenworth are all like flops or failures? They all did horribly in the middle of the order last year for the Padres in important situations. But I'm telling you, these things are just luck. They happen to have a really run of historically bad luck in San Diego.
All right. Well, look, we are heading into March, the month of math. So stick with us. We are going to have a ton of NCAA tournament stuff coming up in the next few shows. If there's stuff you're questioning, wanting to learn more about, wanting to know more about, wanting us to address, please hit us up in the comments section on YouTube or on X at Jordan Brenner, at Peter Keating NJ. We are here for you, unless you're mean. Then we
won't
be.
Did you just call this March Mathness?
I think I might have.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.